Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else fill the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode, second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. In which session and section and time and episode you will hear Jake say,
supply often outruns demand and vice versa.
Oh, okay. You'll hear him say that. You'll hear me say, or something to that effect.
Yeah. Interesting. Fascinating.
Yeah, I do say interesting a lot. The telephone number in here, if you would like to be joining in what we do, presuming that today is Saturday, March 26th, and where you are of 2016, would be 773-1400, or if you are calling outside of the local area, it's well, actually, a lot of times in the local area, my cell phone makes me still dial 254-773-1400 in order to get in here. It says that it doesn't like the idea of me dialing without the area code.
Right.
I don't know why. It should know what area code I'm in.
But what if you're in a different area code when you're dialing? Maybe you think that when you're in D.C., you should still have local calls to your own area code. And then now there's the other thing is that people have been porting their numbers along with them as they've moved from one state to another. And now their area code is an area code from San Francisco, and they live in Fort Worth. So which area code should they dial out or not dial out? So the phone company just said, dial the area codes. Forget it.
I just want to join with the political style today and just be angry about something.
Okay.
Try to find something I can be angry about.
I should stop being a voice of reason.
Yes,
I agree. We should just be able to it should know what we want to dial before we do it.
Well, some economists have come up with an interesting hypothesis, which hasn't been tested very well, obviously, and about interest rates.
A hypothesis about interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
This is sure to make to lull many of our listeners to sleep. Let's continue.
Well, considering that the general consensus of the various governors of the Federal Reserve Board.
Mm-hmm.
Concerning what they're going to do in the next several months or throughout the rest of the year.
Seems to be the consensus is two interest rate hikes rest of the year.
Quarter point apiece, which means that right now the interbank interest rate that the Federal Reserve uses, which is kind of a set point, is 0.25%. And they'll be raising it to 0.75% by the end of the year. That's kind of the consensus.
Technically, it's 0.25. There's the range in there. So they do have some flexibility in there, just like it was never really at zero. It was between zero and 0.25.
But it was effectively zero.
Right. Effectively zero, and it's effectively 0.25.
So
we're being technical for technical purposes only.
And while 0.75% interest doesn't sound like a lot, at least it didn't used to sound like a lot. Sounds like a lot now, particularly in light of the fact that when you measure interest rates throughout most of Europe or in Japan, they're negative numbers, not positive numbers, which is still a little confusing. The hypothesis was that the raising of interest rates will actually cause a boost in the economy, where that's the reverse
of a normal situation.
What they have suggested is...
I tend to agree with this hypothesis, by the way.
Is that right now the pessimism in the economy is what's slowing things down.
Right.
And if the Federal Reserve looks out and says, whoa, I think we're at full employment, which we are pretty much, I think that the economy is overheating and I think it's going too fast, we need to slow it down, people are more likely to believe that things are getting better. But there's another reason. Actually, there's three different reasons.
I have a good reason, too.
Okay,
we'll see if you cover them.
Okay.
Or do you want me to throw one
in? Go ahead,
or
throw a reason in.
Big reason, really, 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 really big reason, is that it's really hard to get a mortgage right now. Unless you could almost pay for the house with cash or have the assets that you could sell to pay for the house, it's really hard to get a mortgage. If you've got great credit and you've got lots of cash sitting there, you still have to jump through burning hoops and fight tigers to get a mortgage. And that's because it's really hard to make a profit on a 30-year mortgage at a bank looking forward where they expect interest rates to be going up from now into the next 30 years. They expect that they're going to be losing money on this mortgage compared to other mortgages for 30 years. So even if they tack on a whole bunch of signing fees and closing costs and whatever new name they want to call it for bank profitability, they're still looking at an interest rate that they are pretty sure is going to be some of the lowest interest rates they're ever going to see. It's hard to make a long-term profit there. And if they raise their interest rates, they're not going to get any business because other banks are competing. But if the expense goes up a little bit for the banks, they can begin to raise their own interest rates, and in doing so can start making a little bit more profit, and so they'll be more likely to give loans out, and that stimulates growth as well in moderation.
We've said for a long time that deflation is the risk, and it is. The reason profitability dropped, but there's three reasons profitability dropped for corporations in the fourth quarter. One is the fact that oil went in the tank, which is, if you've got an oil tank, that's a good place.
Well, you don't want it on the ground.
Actually, want it in the crankcase, not the tank. But anyway, the other thing, the second reason was the fact that the dollar rose against other major currencies in the world over the last year, which makes it really cool to be a tourist overseas. It makes the stuff we bring in cheaper, which incidentally contributes to more deflation. But what it does is it slows down our export business. So we got two chunks of the economy that were slowed, rather dramatically during the last year. So that caused profitability to come down.
The reason why it slows exports is because dollars are, in essence, more expensive. It takes more other currency to buy our stuff. Our stuff suddenly becomes more expensive if we're to make the same profit we did before.
If something we made in the United States costs $1,000 in Europe and the dollar rises by 10%,
it's still $1,000.
It's $1,000 here, but in the euros, it's the equivalent of 10% more. We raised the prices 10%. And we did this during a period of time when the eurozone and other of our the people who purchase things from us are kind of in the economic pits. That's kind of a nice way of putting it. Now, but there's a third reason. And for the shrinkage of profits, and it's the one that's the most insidious. Now,
my reason was one of your reasons,
right?
Oh, okay, good.
There's a third reason, and let me say something about the first two first. They're over.
They're done.
The oil has dropped to a bottom, found it, come back a little bit, and they're among the oil analysts who are out there. No one is expecting it at this point to go down below the lowest it went back in February. And people in general are concluding, as companies shut down and pipelines shut down, that, matter of fact, a lot of them are saying $50, $60 a barrel will probably be the stabilizing point once we get this glut worked off, because the supply has dropped off on the other end. We're now using more oil than we're bringing into storage. That's a good sign. So oil prices will not decline another 70% over the next year. Okay, that means that particular headwind is going away. It isn't. We're still going to see it for the first quarter. The numbers will be reported in the second quarter, so the pessimism will continue.
And that gives us a tailwind there in that
the second
push
half of the year
of cheaper oil on the parts of the economy that use oil for other things. This is a more gradual change to profitability rather than the sudden losses of not being able to manufacture new rigs and so on.
And the dollar is not going to probably rise dramatically against other currencies going forward. It's done pretty much all the rising it's likely to do at this point. Now, that's always an if. So those two areas, they're not going to get better, but they neutralized. Now, the third one, though, is the problem, and that is deflation. And when I say deflation, there is a race going on throughout everything and everywhere to see who can offer the lowest price. People buy things very commonly now, not because this product is better than that product, but because one product is slightly less expensive than the other one.
Right.
And it's a habit we've gotten into. And then we wait for a sale to buy it at even lower cost. To give you an example, my wife said that she, when I was about to go out and pick up some mulch and some topsoil and so on, we live in Salado, and she suggested that I needed to drive up to either one of the big box stores up in Temple to get it, and I said, why? And she says, it'll be cheaper up there. Now, frankly, the reality is that by the time I paid for the amazingly low cost of diesel fuel to get up there and get back, I still would wind up paying more. But the issue is, there is this tendency, even among people who aren't going broke, to look for the lowest possible price. And this is how she knew the prices were less expensive up there, because of the internet. Because she could look on an internet site and see that the prices were cheaper somewhere else. The drop in the cost of communications is causing a drop in the prices offered for anything, a race to the bottom, if you will. That's deflation. That causes a restriction in profitability.
I'm going to give an example of something, because I get from clients and listeners responses like, well, when have people not been looking for better prices for what they can buy? And it seems like a valid question. When the listeners out there probably say, of course, that's what people do in capitalism. Okay, I'm going to give a good example. Most people today have really nice televisions. And when you ask them what brand their television is, most of them don't know.
Right. In other words, it's not the reliability in the brand.
Right. If you go back 15 years, now the televisions were smaller, but if you wanted to get a nice television, well, you'd probably be getting a Curtis Mathis, and it was a big piece of furniture as well, or fill in the blank. But you knew the manufacturer because you were buying it for the quality. But now, if you're getting a quality television, top-of-the-line quality television, you've got 8 different suppliers to price between, because the cost of creating that television has come down so much. So that leads us to not give a whole lot of weight to the reliability of the product, because the cost of technology means that you could probably double the size of your TV in 5 years anyway. And I don't know how you're going to fit it in your house anymore, but you can do it.
You get a bigger house.
Right. You just have to get a bigger house. But right. That's all deflationary. That's a tendency to look at the cost of something rather than the quality of something. Well, we haven't had a time to figure out which of these manufacturers actually has good quality over a long period of time, because people aren't keeping their televisions that long.
And
all of that is part of an attitude shift from the longer-term creation of a product with a lot more work that went into it to a commoditization of products, and that leads to deflation.
Well, let me take this story with my wife a step further.
Okay.
She got in the car and said she was going to be driving to Temple, to the big box stores, to get some plants and some additional things that she wanted to use for the garden. She got up to the intersection up in the northern part of Salado and looked at the highway and turned and went over to Ace Hardware.
Yeah, it's not cheap enough.
But this is the point. This is what I want to say. The cost of communication, transportation is a form of communication,
right,
by the way.
Right.
The cost of communication increased in her perception between here and Temple.
Right.
So she was willing to pay a little bit more. And by the way, when I went and looked at the prices, they really weren't more.
But the perception was.
The perception was, I'll probably get a better price at the big box store in Temple. And the issue was that as the cost of communication continues to drop, we face a severe deflationary tendency anyway. Now, how do we avoid the deflationary tendency? How do we get around that? The deflationary tendency will go away when demand rises. Let me say that again. The deflationary tendency that is the biggest threat to our economy right now, and it is, it's the thing that is wrecking the European economy and the Japanese economy, is deflation. The deflationary tendency will go away when the people who are earning that 4.4% more per year start spending more of that wage increase.
Right.
As long as they're saving it, then we are going to be in kind of a doldrum situation. We're going to be difficult. Because what happens is, as wages increase, and employers, because they're running out of people to work, they're running out of qualified employees, the number of job openings is rising much faster than the number of new hires. And the reason that is,
you have to pay people more.
You have to pay people more, which cuts into profitability of companies. And not only does it cut into the profitability of the companies, they can't raise prices currently because the people who they're hiring are all busy saving their money.
Right.
Now, why are they saving?
So is everybody else.
Why are they saving their money? And they're saving their money primarily because they're scared. Why are they scared? Turn on the television and listen to the presidential debates, and you'll understand why they're scared.
Right.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, Rick Von Salado.
Hello, Rick Von Salado. Hey, a guy in Salado called me and wanted to invest in something, and I thought it was a really good idea. I thought maybe you, because you're in the transportation business, you'd know where we could find this. He wanted tow truck futures.
Because there's a lot of tow trucks out there, huh?
Yeah, I mean, on I-35 right there in Salado, we're having about a major wreck a week with an 18-wheeler now.
Right.
And about a wreck a day in that little stretch in there. So we I don't know. I thought maybe you knew where you could get tow truck futures.
I don't have a clue. I mean, you probably could open a store there and sell,
contracts on insurance. Tow trucks.
Yeah, something like that. But,
insurance,
anyway.
Maybe?
I don't know. And anyway, so you called. Go ahead.
Yes, you swerved into politics already. How long has it been? Y'all went, an hour and 10 minutes, 20 minutes?
Right. Well, we're not actually in politics. We're talking about the effect of the political environment in general.
We haven't talked about any individual politician yet.
We could.
Oh, we could. Okay. Well, we could.
You know, in the news right now is our fearless leaders down in the our fellow banana republics now, right? I mean, we've become a banana republic, so he's going down there to.
I really don't think we're a banana republic.
Well, we are. Absolutely, we are.
We are?
Yeah. I mean, La Quinta Banana is still owned by the United States, and that's a banana. And we are.
The United Fruit Company is owned by the United States of America?
No, by U.S. citizens. A big chunk of it.
Okay,
so that's American. And if you come back a step from there and you say, all right, so we are also a republic, it's a democratic republic, then we are a banana republic.
Yeah. Well, that's a bit of a stretch.
A lot of people
are talking about Bernie. Bernie has made no bones about it. He's a socialist.
Yep.
And he loves the socialistic way of life, and you're not going to probably change his mind, but he had a montage of things of him morphing into this person that he's become with Alan Greenspan on a video. And he was just raking old Alan over the coals years ago about, his job.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
a lot of people are not really aware of what a Fed chief's job is, and also, in addition, I was learning about there's actually it's a three column stool. You've got socialism, capitalism, and corporatism, right? And corporatism seems like that's really the evil that most socialists hate.
Those aren't anywhere near the official kind of. There may be a spectrum of capitalism and socialism, but it's not a spectrum that works well with hegemony.
We are in the United States, as in Europe, we maintain a balance between a socialist aspect to our economy.
Social security, military retirement, that sort of thing.
And a capitalist aspect to our economy, and either one is fatal by itself. And the places the Soviet socialist republics obviously collapsed of their own weight. The Chinese, who are technically communist are actually just an authoritarian capitalist government right now. And the other side of that, of course, is in the 19th century, when we had pretty much unbridled capitalism, we typically went into a major depression every 10 years, which doesn't work particularly well.
And just as a real quick side note, you mentioned corporatism. Corporatism is a facet of both socialism and capitalism, because you have the term corporation can be applied very easily to the term union. If you interchange the two, it's a group that votes together with and money's involved in the process. So they have a voting. If you say a union member and a shareholder as a concept, you've got a very similar organism. So, yeah. And those are the flip sides of each other. So if you're talking about a spectrum, socialism and capitalism may be on a spectrum, but there's a lot of mixing that you can do so it's not like a linear spectrum. It's more like a big circle where you've got some, for instance, if we have a military, should it be a capitalist run enterprise where it's a for-profit entity? And the Chinese have tried that. So this social
contracting out there.
Yeah, the Chinese actually ran a capitalist military for quite a while.
While the country was socialist. Well, we run a socialist military, and now there's it's socialist only in the sense that it's run by the society. It's nationalized, it's being run by the government.
Yeah, and
which is all of us. That's socialism.
Well, it's social in every sense, in the sense that a person who's on active duty is forbidden to perform their duties in a for-profit manner in any form or fashion, or participate in a for-profit operation.
If an on-duty general comes on the air and starts talking about political things, he's just broken all kinds of regulations and laws.
It's not just political things. That general cannot run a business on the side.
Right. So that's socialism.
And they can't very well sell their military service to the highest bidder.
Right. And we are taxing other people to give to them. Now, it's a decent way of running an army, because you don't want, for instance, corporations to be running the army. The Pinkertons were not pretty law-abiding citizens for a big chunk of the time that the Pinkertons were the national police force. So corporations come out of both ends of that.
And you're in the village of Salado, right?
Yeah.
You realize that Salado is a corporation. And
it was incorporated less than 20 years ago, wasn't it?
Yes, but it is a corporation to begin with. Yeah. Secondly,
it's also a government.
It's also socialist.
Yeah,
because they take money from everybody and they distribute it according to the way the board of directors wants to do it.
And they don't have any traffic lights. How about
that's correct. That's correct. And that is the most important piece.
No, there's really no need to, because we have so much construction going on, you can't get through town anyway.
Yeah.
The balance point. The balance point is one of the most important issues here, because capitalism, as it was described by Adam Smith, and socialism as defined as communism by Karl Marx, really don't have a lot of similarities with the political structures that grew out of them. Adam Smith talked about regulating trade, that you regulate it so that it can be more free. And Karl Marx talked about making sure that incentive existed so that you could make yourself better and the people around you better. So if you look at some pretty clear facets of the original writings, you see that they're not that far away from each other, but that political organizations, Lenin did a lot to move Marx into socialism from communism. A commune is a family.
There's an interesting aspect of Europe in that spectrum you were just talking about. The further north you go in Europe, the more socialist the economies get. You aware of that?
Yes.
Okay, now listen to this just a second.
I'm listening.
Also, the further north you go in Europe, the more healthy the economies get.
Right.
But more capitalism there is. There's actually, in for instance, Sweden, which proudly proclaims themselves as social democrats, they have a very healthy economy. They don't have negative interest rates. They don't have they have corporations doing really quite well,
and
they have general prosperity. Whereas if you go to
it's a different mix of socialism and capitalism.
If you go to the southern, if you go to Italy, Italy is almost pure capitalist, and they are falling through any crack they can find to fall through financially right now. And I'm not saying that socialism is better than. Than capitalism.
Because it's not.
I'm simply saying that there is a lot of depth to this and a lot of complexity to this that people just, they don't like socialism, but they do want their Social Security.
Right. And the fact is that if you want your road fixed, then taxes get paid, and they get paid in a way that's described by taking from the taxpayer. And sometimes it's taken on an equal basis.
Taking from the rich and giving to the road.
Right. Taking from the rich and giving to the road. I mean, that... Any taxation with the intent to distribute it among other people is a form of socialism. The army is socialism. Road work is socialism.
Anyway.
And to take it, we have a generalized meaning of socialism that isn't the economic meaning.
So what you started to say, you were talking about this three-legged stool, and it's actually only got two legs, but go ahead.
It's only got two?
Yeah, that doesn't make it very stable.
It's not a stool.
Nope.
But it's a balance.
There are a couple other legs that you could add to it.
He wanted to make a point on that. What was it?
We're on stilts.
Right. No, it's kind of like a balance. You know, like the weight, where you had a weight on one side of a balance and a weight on the other? It's that type of structure.
I would also add in some individual property rights as part of this.
Yeah.
One aspect of this is... monetary and taxation, but another aspect of it is individual property rights. So that if you say my rights are sacrosanct and they come before the masses, that's a kind of a libertarian base. And then if you go to the other end, which could also be considered a form of socialism or communism, which says that the mass comes before the individual, there's also balances there. So you have communism and socialism as a governmental structure. And then you have individual rights as a concept. And that mix, when you combine all four of those things, could mean that you've got a very socialist capitalist system or a very capitalist socialist system or just a, for instance, pure libertarianism with pure capitalism leads to anarchy. But if you don't have libertarianism, you get anarchy on the other direction.
Anyway, you were going to make a point about all that.
Our fearless leader right now is no doubt.
Wait a minute. Can you back up a step? Would you call him who he is?
Who is
you're
it?
Talking
Which
about the
leader?
President? You're speaking the president of the United States.
You bet.
Okay. All right.
I can hardly say his name anymore. I'm sorry.
Try saying President Obama.
President Obama.
There you
thank
go.
Thank you.
He's in a banana republic.
He's clearly leaning towards that communist socialist agenda where you take from who's making the wealth and wants to distribute it to the rest of the people.
Yes, in certain areas, but he's also pro the transatlantic and transpacific partnerships. That's free trade. That would be considered pure capitalism. So there's a mix again. If you paint
you need to
with
explain
one,
that one.
Oh, wait a minute.
Okay.
You need to explain that one because a lot of people do not want that TPP.
Well, that's not capitalist to not want it.
That's socialist.
Right. To say that we want to be able to purely trade, to be this, that's capitalism. If you go right down to the base of it, it's an unprotected system where I'm allowed to trade at a lower price than anybody else if I can afford it. And free trade is pure capitalism. It means that just because there's a border between you doesn't mean that there's an artificial price being added to something. So, for instance, if somebody has a plant in China and a plant in Taiwan and they're making the same product, to buy and sell it back and forth, they're not in competition because China has tariffs on Taiwanese products. So they're not in equal footing.
Now, let me explain something about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. China is not in the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Correct.
They are right now, China is promoting hard a separate agreement that we aren't in. If we reject the Trans-Pacific Partnership, China will form one and we will be left out.
I see.
So the people who say we should reject the Trans-Pacific, all the Trans-Pacific Partnership does is it lowers restrictions on our ability to sell things along the Pacific Rim. And we have very few restrictions on their ability to sell things here, but we would also drop those so that we would have an open and free trade around the Pacific, which every study and every experience has been increases the economic welfare of everyone concerned. Now,
however, the demagoguery is that we may lose our jobs because somebody else can do it better or cheaper or both. And that's the reason why a lot of people that claim to be conservatives really want the government to step in and level the playing field. By leveling the playing field, I mean that if somebody else can make a better product for cheaper, then the government needs to make their prices higher so that we can compete with them. That's pure socialism.
Well, let's just say, for example, you're in the bicycle business, right?
Yes. Okay. I like bikes.
Well, let's just say that the government stepped in and said, what we're going to do is impose a tariff on all bikes not made in New England.
Hmm.
Would you like that? Would you think it would be really good? And if you sell a bike anywhere else, other than from New England, you got to charge more money for that bike than you do for an identical bike made in Texas.
You see where we're going with that.
That is the whole issue. Free trade, and by the way, that is the way it was prior to the Civil War. Various regions in the country had restrictive trade agreements between the states where they got special deals.
Even though the Constitution,
everybody else didn't.
Even though the Constitution says interstate trade is regulated by Congress, states' rights were saying, well, we get the right to say no. And we still have that if you look at the insurance world. The rates from one border to the next, or when you're talking about tobacco, you know, some people are charging huge taxes on tobacco, but if you cross the border and buy some in another place, you can get a 50% price drop.
So the point is that a lot of people who call themselves conservatives are really socialists.
But they're also conservative.
Now, thank you.
All right. Okay,
my
take care.
Okay.
And having said that, you know, a lot of conservatives would really not like to stop receiving Social Security or be told you are not getting it because it's not in line with your political beliefs.
You're off Medicare.
Right. So,
but those are two very socialist systems.
We're making a point here in that socialism is not all one color. Some socialism, pretty much we've agreed with as a society to say this makes sense, it's a good safety net. Some socialism, the conservatives love and the Democrats love as well in the extremes. So Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz are all for slapping tariffs on everything from outside, particularly China, but also Mexico in certain cases, and against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that's free trade, that's capitalism. So when you have the conservative side agreeing on a socialist issue with an admitted socialist, you have to recognize what's going on there is that there's a mix of socialism and capitalism in every party. You can't have just one side being socialist because both sides are. And you can't have just one side being capitalist because both sides are. It's just how much they are.
Well, speaking of how much they are, we are on a for-profit radio station, KTEM, and Town Square is KTEM and Town Square pay for this. And they sell commercials to pay for this, part of their free enterprise thingy, whatever they do. And we have to play the commercials so they can pay for the radio program. And so after we're done with these commercials on the other side, we'll be back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
Are you hiring but not sure where to find the best candidate?
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And this is Saturday, 26 March, 2016. And if you would like to give us a call, 773-1400, area code 254-773-1400 is R&M the number.
Right.
And now that I have really mixed the pot by telling all the conservatives out there that they were socialists and all the socialists out there that they're capitalists, we should have some good angry calls.
Okay. And so we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
You got to turn up the...
Well, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm driving, so I wasn't sure. I may have misunderstood what you said a while ago, but I was under the impression that you were talking about Social Security and possibly Medicare as being socialism.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
But then well, is my savings account at the bank socialism?
No.
No. But you don't. Then, there is no Social Security savings account.
Right.
It's people.
It's a tax.
Your Social Security is paid for by people who are working today. If you're drawing Social Security.
But that's not the way it really should have been, correct?
No, it has to be that way. It has to be that way. If Social Security were, let's say, invested in the stock market, let's just say all the money that's been paid into Social Security were invested in the stock market, the federal government would own
the whole stock market.
Would own about 80% of the stock market right now. 80% of the corporations in the United States would be federalized. That is pure socialism. It's strictly there is a book entry at the federal level, and it's strictly a book entry.
It pays interest on the books.
And that says, hey, you know, you paid this much in and you're going to take this much out. But some people.
It's an IOU from Congress.
This is what I guess. You paid money in. Yeah, okay, over the years. I paid money in over the years, which, by the way, was spent by the government on something else.
Yeah. Part of the reason why we have a deficit, and the deficit is as low as it is because all the money that has for a long time been brought in from Social Security gets spent on the general fund.
But what happens is, if you die at 64, how much of your Social Security that you paid in do you get back? None.
Gee, I don't get
none.
Any of it back.
That's right. Somebody else gets all the money you paid in, right?
Right.
Was that is that capitalism? In other words, you buy something and you pay a lot for it. And
you never get it?
And you never get any money. Somebody else gets your money.
And sometimes it's
pure cricket. That's what it is.
No, that's perfectly legitimate. Everybody pays in, and those who make more pay in more. And then everybody who reaches a certain age, who's participated for a certain period of time, who's got 40 quarters, then starts getting money. And some of them will get a lot more money than they paid in, and some of them will get a lot less.
Anytime that you have a large group of people expecting to get remunerated, paid, for not really creating value. So Social Security didn't do anything for anyone. The money that went into it, it only goes out to the people getting Social Security, theoretically. But it got paid for the government in all kinds of other ways in the meantime. But anytime you have a situation where there's a large group of people that expect to get paid for not really creating a value, if they all agreed to do it, that's socialism. And that includes the lottery.
Yeah,
and you have a lot of people that pay into a system, and they all know that only a few people are going to get the results of that, but they do it anyway. It's a form of socialism that's kind of backwards, and then it makes wealthy people out of wealthy people.
You can take the pool of money that is Social Security, SSI, Medicare. It's all one basic pool of money. And
I know, and there's a lot of it that comes. Fortunately, I have a pretty good salary, and each one of those lines is about $500 every couple of weeks.
Sure, right. But it is a socialist system. The purpose of Social Security, well, it actually had several purposes, but one of the main one was is so that old people who haven't saved their money and who haven't invested their money, and as a result come to the point where they can no longer work, don't starve to death.
I've got an easier way for you to really recognize that it's a socialist system. What is it called?
Social Security.
Yeah. That is a purely socialist program.
And by the way, we now have a situation where people who make over a couple making over $250,000 a year pay more into Social Security than they did before.
And they get less.
And they don't get any increase in benefits. And we've been creeping in that direction for many, many years. So that the bottom line to it is, it is a socialist system. It's a good socialist system. It works, and we as the people, we the people of the United States have agreed to do it this way.
I'm going to ruffle some more feathers really quick, but I'm going to do it.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, except, I mean, it's one of those things. I'm nearly 70, and I'm still not drawing it.
Right.
I don't really need to yet. But I've been forced to pay into it all my life. Now,
That's a long time
ago, I didn't pay in much. Now I pay in a lot.
Well, right. you are one of the
401k has outdone my Social Security about 5 to 1.
Yeah, yeah, and that's pretty common because the interest rate that Congress pays to itself for the right to give itself an IOU is not very high, and that's how you would get any earnings off of your Social Security.
Okay.
To ruffle the feathers real quick. Communism is about the most perfect form of organization. If everyone involved volunteered, communism is a family, a small family unit, two kids, two parents. Doesn't matter how you feel about what gender any of them are. Two parents earning money. One of them may be staying to take care of the children, or they may both be going out earning money. The kids are just expensive. They provide kind of an emotional support. But every demographic is that parents work harder and are more productive than single individuals. So suddenly, a small social group, pure communist, starts performing better because they become a commune. It doesn't work at all. This utopia doesn't work at all if it's mandatory, if it's not volunteers, because then you don't have any incentive to do this. You get lack of productivity rather than some reason to produce more.
Therein lies the reason that then when you think of communism, we think of USSR or Russia, whatever.
Correct.
Whatever
mandatory. That mandatory communism.
Yeah, but that's why the tractors we make in this country are great. The tractors they make are crap.
Right, because if you can't fire the person who made the tractor crap, and if you can't dock their pay, and so how are you going to make it better?
Yeah, and it's there. But the point we're trying to make is there's a balance there. And Sweden has a far more socialist, for example, form of government and economy than we do, but economically they are doing quite well. Italy has an almost purely capitalist economy, and they're doing horribly. So it's not as simple as saying capitalism versus socialism. It is a balance, and it's a careful balance we have to maintain. For example, I recently talked to Lynn Woolley, who's a local conservative talk show, has indicated, and I said, if you're truly against socialism, why don't you come out with a rant against Social Security and against Medicare? And he said, Jeff, do you realize how many of my listeners draw Social Security and Medicare? And I said, well, then what you're doing, you're just selling out like the congressman.
Oh, that's a little harsh.
That is harsh. But the bottom line to it is our congressman is a conservative. I've had long talks with him. He is true conservative to his toenails, but he's certainly not introduced a bill to abolish Social Security.
Which means
clearly a socialist system.
Right, which means that conservatism can and does accept and even enjoys forms of socialism.
But if you'll go back to the 1930s when Social Security was being set up and you read what the conservatives had to say about it.
They did not like it.
You will discover that they lost.
Right.
And we and the conservatives today are taking the position that is virtually identical to what was called socialism in the 1930s, almost perfectly identical in every aspect of what we do. And that's just the reality of it.
Yeah, and
you convince me.
The strangeness is that, like I said, it's not like linear where you have a line and the government is somewhere on the line between capitalism and socialism, because there's so many different kinds of socialism and so many different kinds of capitalism. If we wanted to run our government as a for-profit entity, like a corporate board, that would be capitalist.
Right.
We're not going to do that. That's because the incentive in, as we've seen.
Well, that would be a deal. Task the government under the new Constitution.
To make a profit.
To make a profit, yeah.
Yeah, and to do new things that people are going to pay for that they want to pay for to make a profit. And that's one business model. That's one concept of capitalism. Another piece of that, and as we said, the Chinese made for a long time their army be a for-profit entity, and it caused their performance numbers to drop horribly while they were making a profit, because you can't train to fight and hide and shoot if you're making shirts. And that's what was going on. So we have to recognize that balance, and it moves around. It's not the same this year as it was last year. The balance point, just like when if you're charging taxes for people, there's something on there called in the revenue area called the Laffer curve, where if you raise taxes and you've gone beyond the Laffer point, taxes went up and revenue goes down because less people want to work because taxes are too high. And you can go the other direction. You can drop taxes so far that revenue goes down too because people are paying you less of the stuff that they're earning anyway. So that mix of the Laffer point changes every year, and it changes having to do with how well we're doing in the economy. It changes with how motivated we are to do things. That mix between socialism and capitalism changes too. Any given year, in any given economic situation, something that worked really well or really poorly could have the opposite effect in a completely different environment.
Yeah. Make sense?
Yeah. Hopefully not, but because it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it sort of makes sense. I obviously don't do what you do for a living, so but it makes a little bit of sense.
Well, we think about it a lot. Let me tell you. Let me say.
Are you a capitalist or?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, yeah, we work. That's all we work with is capital. But we also recognize something else, and that is to have effective capitalism, you have to have a degree of socialism built in. For example, how long do you think Boeing, which is one of the prime capitalist entities, how long do you think they would keep their employees if they didn't provide health care? I mean, the law aside, if they didn't offer a socialist health care system and a socialist retirement system, they wouldn't keep their employees. They'd all go someplace else, right? So it's in the best interest of capitalism to redistribute wealth, which is socialism, to some degree, to provide a safety net at the bottom. And what we debate about in the United States, really, outside of some of the current debate, which is about what a person's wife looks like, what we debate about in politics in the United States is the fine, fine edges of a system that we have conceded works really well.
There's another piece here, and that's free markets. We totally believe in free markets.
Yes.
However, if there isn't some form of regulation of those free markets, then they're not really free. They're robbery zones. If you go to buy a car, it's a new car, you take it home and it doesn't work, and you go, well, the car's not working, it's a new car, there are steps that you can follow to get your money back. If the person doesn't want to give you your money back, we have a state regulation, the Lemon Laws, that say you can't sell new cars that don't work. If you do it consistently, then you're going to go to jail. If you don't do it consistently, but you did it, then you're going to pay a lot of money in damages.
It's just like when you go to buy meat at the store, you're probably quite confident that it's safe to buy.
You don't have to worry about it.
And that's because we have a federal regulator that controls the creation and manufacturing and sale of food products in the United States. It's called the Food and Drug Administration. And is that a socialist aspect? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so free markets are absolutely necessary for a healthy economy. However, if you don't regulate them at all, you don't have a healthy economy. You have Haiti. You have Jamaica.
Oh, yeah. South America, by the way, through most of South America, the economies, which are generally train wrecks, are almost pure capitalism. And I don't think we want to go there.
So free markets with regulations and capitalism with a little bit of socialism, and that's how we are successful as a nation.
So that's basically where when somebody says, I'm a pure capitalist, I say,
whoa, you're a pirate.
Well, man, all you have to do is there's several nations in South America you can move to, and you should be perfectly happy.
Right.
Of course, you'll be sick a lot from eating poison food, but that's all right.
Okay, we're about out of time. Thanks for the call. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and it's Saturday, March 26th, and it's almost 11:59, which means we need to be shutting this thing down. The Personal Wealth Coach is not only a radio presentation, it is also the name of an investment advisory firm that these two guys that are sitting in here are the principal, of which we are the principals. I don't want to have a dangling participle.
Right, no. Can't
so, dangle. And if you'd like to contact us off the air to either ask or suggest or something about the show or to talk to us about investing, our telephone numbers are 254-947-1111 or...
You can reach that toll-free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us directly, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, The Personal Wealth Coach, or tpwc.com. You can read our philosophy, listen to podcasts. If you haven't gotten enough of us calling you socialists or capitalists, whichever opposite you are, you could still get more angry if you listen online. So until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
KTM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.